You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
That's it. We did it. We have completed a month of Women's World Cup shows. We, as in me, Alexis hasn't. But I'm excited to be joined today on the Cooligans Women's World Cup Daily, our final episode of this series with dear friend, and you've seen her on CBS's The Attacking Third. Give it up for Christine Kubo.
Jazz hands. No, I'm happy to be here.
I hit the wrong button.
Happy to have had the absolute, possibly the best World Cup final we've ever seen.
Really? Okay. I mean, that's a bold statement. I mean, I guess it's, as Americans, we probably tend to say it's the best World Cup final we've ever seen because England lost. Whenever England loses, it's like, man, I can't even imagine a better World Cup.
Objectively, if we're not licking our wounds and being all, poor me, America.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the highest level playing that we've seen, prettiest football,
for sure.
And usually the women's World Cups are more goal filled than the men's side, but I've been to a couple, but yeah, unfortunately missed this one in real life.
Sure.
But fantastic to watch.
On screen. This was a real, I don't know, tactical battle here where we've been talking about it. Like kind of ad nauseum, where the quality and the technical ability of players on a lot of the countries is just so different from 2019 to now. It's just like it's not about pace and power exclusively. It's not about just the fastest team wins or whatever, or the most athletic team wins. It is truly, you're seeing technical ability flourish and it being such an important part of, whether a team succeeds or fails. So
Christians, it's almost like if you incrementally invest in your women's side.
Yeah.
They improve. It's a crazy idea.
And thanks to FIFA president Gianni Infantino, we get the inspirational messages that all we got to do is just push a couple doors down, okay? Or is it a sliding door? Is it, what kind of door are we working with, okay?
I don't know. But does he realize that he's making it like the sign says push on the door, but it's a pull door at this point?
Right? I can't tell, what. We'll break it down because I want to play that because we haven't had a chance to talk about it, but yeah, a lot to go over. So hello everybody,
it's the Cooligans, buddy.
My name is Christian Polanco. I'm excited about today. Spain are the champions of the world at the moment. I believe it's the second or third. Spain are the second or third country to for the men and women side to win a World
Cup. Second. Germany,
okay.
And Spain.
So a huge accomplishment. Obviously we'll go through all the storylines. Obviously, there's a lot to unpack when it comes to Spain winning this World Cup because, yeah, a lot of people didn't want them to win. Maybe even some of the players didn't want to win. So it's a very confusing kind of story, but we'll kind of break down as much as we can. And we'll try to focus on what does England do now? I mean, because outside of just having us kind of make fun of them a little bit.
Here's the thing. England should be proud of their performance.
Sure.
They possibly have the best side they've ever had for their women. They are formidable. They played their game. They just weren't all there today. Errors were made. They were exploited. Some of the show-out players for this tournament, Lucy Bronze, had an error that ended up being converted into a goal for Spain.
What was she? She was just like, yo, I'm taking this. I'm going.
Leroy James.
I'm going hoop to hoop. I'm going to take this myself. And that decision led to her not being in position to defend, and Olga Carmona ends up scoring.
Carmona was on fire today. There were a lot of players that I kind of expected to see, like that Hemp Paredes matchup today, where they kind of did battle.
I thought Hemp was great.
She's always going to be a force. She's a great footballer. Although I did especially appreciate that Carmona literally sat her down around 90th minute. She literally just shook her and she collapsed. And I was like, oh, I'm going to pretend like that's never happened to me before. But I felt the embarrassment where you're kind of like locked in. And then all of a sudden you're just like, oh, okay, she's just going to go around me and dribble. But Spain's hold up play is remarkable. They have such patience and it's just so composed. That, you know, at one point we watched them kind of just pivot into their own little rondo.
Regardless of how much England pressed, Spain were always able to.
That's the thing. And also, you can't assume. So Serena Weigman is one of world's best football managers, all in. She's brilliant. She's able to pivot. She knows how to sort of be amenable. Oops, sorry. I'm going to just break all the table. I'm breaking the glass table. Now.
You're supposed to break the glass ceiling, not the table.
That's what's holding me back.
Sorry, I have to mansplain this to you, Christine. But you're doing it. You're doing womaning wrong.
Unfortunate.
Anyway.
I'll do better. I promise. God, that's embarrassing. But Serena is known to be able to pivot and be able to change on the fly, and her squads as well. They trust her so much. You saw the second half that she switched to 4-3-3. That, you know, you had Lauren James come on. It was a tale of two halves for them. But I still think that they did brilliantly for what they had. They just play a wildly different game from Spain. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and more than anything, I think I thought England played a great game. I mean, Serena Weigman, after the game, she said basically, like, Spain were just a little bit better than we were. And I think that's exactly well put. Was it Hemp that hit the crossbar in the shot? I forgot who took the shot.
I think it was.
Yeah. And was. Look, if that goes in.
And that was very early.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a very open game for what it was, right? And obviously, you're not going to get points for possession, or that game would have gone to Spain instantly.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But with that being said, you know, it was anyone's match. And there were moments for sure, for me at least, where when Spain were out of possession, they seemed a little bit more disorganized than you would normally expect of that Spain side. And that was where I got a little shaky, where you know that England are going to exploit that every chance that they can get. You know, they kind of start running over each other. You have someone loose. And fortunately for Spain, that never came to fruition. But very evenly matched. Greenwood's injury coming off who was that, Parayuelo, which was unfortunate. Coming back out with like the head bandage, which for me like harkens back to a lot of the U.S. women's national team players who have now storied careers having head injuries or bleeding from the head at some point that just kind of hammered back. So you kind of were like, hey, is that going to turn the key? Sometimes that is the little trigger point that says like, oh yeah, okay.
I thought the decision to start Salma Parayuelo over Alexia Putellas was a big decision, and because Parayuelo has been amazing coming off the bench, and I was a little bit nervous in the second half where I'm like, man, wouldn't it be great if Parayuelo just came off the bench right now? And I'm like, oh wait, she's already there.
Yeah, yeah. I think that a lot of that this tournament had to do with Putellas coming back from her ACL injury, but
Putellas has not been great.
There's always been the expectation that Putellas would rise to the occasion, right? So she had an assist this tournament. She didn't have any goals. It felt very much like waiting for her to kind of turn the page. And I just don't think we saw that. So it made sense that Parayuelo managed to get the start again. Kind of expected her to be more decisive when she came off the bench, though, today, Putellas especially.
Sure. Just a good performance. I mean, there's not much to say. When you were talking about their composure, in the second half, especially when England made the subs they needed to make, bring on a little bit of energy, Spain just like they weren't really fazed. There's a video going around that went viral of Alphonso Davies doing some podcast and talking about when he first got to Bayern Munich, and he, like with the mentality that he had, he thought I had to be like Neymar. I thought I had to have like tricks and moves and have all this technical ability. And then I get to Bayern and I'm playing with like Thomas Müller. And he's like, Müller has no swag, no moves. My man can't even, can barely run. He has no speed, but you can't get the ball off of him. He specifically says, Alphonso Davies is like, his first touch is what makes him completely world-class. His first touch will always put the ball in the position that you're not, and the football IQ is just kind of crazy. And that's what I was thinking watching Spain. I'm like, I know they're tired.
Yeah.
I'm tired watching this game.
Yes, for sure.
There's no way they're not tired.
England were definitely gassed, too. You could see there's no way that you're chasing Spain around for 90-plus minutes and being like, I feel good. That was a nice warm-up. You know? Especially when you look at a player like Payuelo, who's also a 400-meter Olympic hurdler.
Right, right.
Okay? The 400-meter is one of the hardest races to run. I know. That was my event, okay? Like, it's a full-out sprint.
Well, there's a lot of Americans
she's
listening.
She's got gas, right. Okay? There's and she only recently pivoted to full-time footballer. So
right, right.
She's got that, like, more than one dog in her.
Is 400 meters. There's a lot of Americans listening and watching. What is that? What is that? Like, from here to the air conditioner or what?
That's not even going to be a 55 indoor, Christian. You know what? We'll work on our metric system.
Okay.
In the office.
Ever since the U.S.-Sweden millimeter, I'm like, all right, why are you doing this to us? You're introducing our education
What's
system.
What's the conversion you're holding up fingers? Listen, I saw some tweets this World Cup with people trying to convert what we refer to in America as military time.
Right.
And half of the world cackling at us. And I'm like, I get it, okay?
Yeah, it's strange. Like sometimes whenever I go to England and I'm like on the tube or whatever, and then you just like glance at other people's phones.
On the tube, wearing your jumper, going to your flat.
Okay. Relatable enough, okay? But you look at other people's phones and you see, it says like 15:18 or something. And you're like, all right, is your phone defective? Why? You look over like, yeah, something's wrong with your time. Why are you in my
15 o'clock? That was a while ago, bro.
Nah, bro.
It's 15 o'clock. I was supposed to be there at 17 o'clock. I don't know what time is that.
So, yeah, okay. We do things a little bit differently out here because, the American education system is just a little flawed.
I know some people that just do the military time on their phones, just like in the United States. I'm like, that's a total hardo move.
Yeah, bro.
What are you doing? You're doing too much, bro.
You know that they work for some sort of, like, healthcare service.
Lockheed Martin.
They're definitely, they're not civilians.
War profiteers. Put it that way. That's who I'm hanging out with.
So, so let's get into, obviously, Spain winning is obviously, it's a big deal. Their first Women's World Cup. And, but the issue, the cloud over this team is, their federation and their coach. And, we've spoken about this a little bit throughout the tournament, but we haven't mentioned there is a thread that was written by Michael Emilio, who is a photographer. And I guess I don't know where he works in particular, but the thread went viral.
Okay.
And it just, these are just the bullet points. These are kind of the specifics about why the Spanish players kind of protested, and a lot of them didn't even play in this World Cup. A lot of the names that we're kind of familiar with. But here's just a quick rundown. So here are some of the complaints. Lack of privacy. And it says in the tweet, Jorge Vilda infamously prohibited players to lock their hotel room doors while on national team duty with Spain. I've mentioned that before because that's one of the things I heard. The other mention is lack of rest, that there was a lack of kind of rotating players, a lack of medical assistance. It says the Spanish Federation would not invest properly into the Spanish women's national team, causing injuries to be commonplace, lack of nutritionists, lack of match analysis and tactical understanding, low quality training sessions. And it continues, says, as players reported to have been in a worse physical shape when returning to their respective clubs after having been on national team duty. So if you were watching the celebrations with the trophy or just being excited about winning World Cup, you saw all the players completely ignore their coach. They don't give them pretty much any credit. Even when players get subbed off and a coach is, you know, shakes hands.
Usually high five. Hip bump,
None of that. So clearly the players are doing this in spite of their coach and the federation. And the players have been very upfront in saying they don't want him as their coach. The federation said, nope, we're keeping him. And there's also more details of like, and this is all sort of conspiracies and stuff like that. But Vilda is like, I don't know if he's not related or something, but he was like a voter for something. And people think that he got the job because out of a favor.
They're like tying it through.
Yeah. So and they're like, no, we're not going to. Yeah. We're not going to get rid of him because, you know, whatever.
I think that some of those details are less important than the road that kind of paved the way for these women to actually win this final.
Yeah.
I think it was in the management of these demands. I think the initial reaction is very telling in that the FA really decided to go with the news cycle at its next possible convenience.
Yeah.
To sort of create this narrative of these players are betrayers of Spain. And, you know, it's a you problem, not an us problem, which is just more than unreasonable. It's very understated that I say that.
Yeah, and I just want to add the actual word that they used, that the players were labeled as blackmailers, mm-hmm. By certain fans and media. And that's, yeah, this is, it was a, so the intention was for the players to bring this up privately and the federation made it public.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right, so there were the captains who were tasked with delivering this letter, whether or not they were signatories on it. They mm-hmm. were in support of it, delivered it to hear their fellow players out. And instead of it being a meeting, even,
sure.
to rehash what the issues are, which these are all very reasonable asks, whether you're in playing a football game or life in a business, you know, like, especially as women, right? And this kind of feeds back into sort of Infantino's quote more recently, which I'm sure we'll get to. But the fact that there wasn't even an understanding that maybe we should collaborate on making this better, and the instant knee-jerk reaction was, you're all wrong. And as an aside, because there's been a lot of what about or actuallys today even directed my way online, is even if these were hypothetical situations, if you have 15 of your players come to you with a request, demand, and they're willing to work with it, which that was how it was framed initially, is like, we're willing to work with you. We want to see our needs met.
Yeah.
Even if it's not significant, substantial, or super duper explosive, like, oh my God, gas, which we've seen, unfortunately, a lot in WOSO.
Yeah.
You still hear them out.
Yeah, this at the very least, this doesn't the way the Spanish Federation kind of responded feels a little bit like y'all are being like a dismissive, y'all are being emotional kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But then you look at the requests and it's like it's just like workplace condition things that you would think that doesn't seem that to be as much emotion in it as there is like principle.
Right.
Right. So when you hear some of the players that didn't want to come back, they were just like, no, I'm standing by, you know, my principles, and this is what I believe, and that is why I'm not playing.
And on the other side of that coin is no player looks at a World Cup as not the greatest crowning achievement of your career. Even if you don't win, mm-hmm. you've now played in a World Cup.
Yeah.
You're not going to turn that down.
Yeah, okay? It has to be very serious for you to turn
and
it down.
And that's just the serious, right, there's a certain amount of weight carried there that...
Yeah.
For sure should have been taken far more seriously than it had been. That's just incomprehensible to me.
Yeah, so it does seem like an institutional issue.
I'd say institutional failure across the board. But also women have been asked, especially in this particular sport, I can't speak to many of the others because I'm just not in the weeds there, mm-hmm. to achieve and succeed and win in every single facet without having a modicum of support in the right direction under the worst conditions in less than what the men would be expected to perform under, which is just not reasonable. We're playing the same game.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a, it's unfair is like the easy way to kind of describe it. And, but it just even the requests or just the complaints themselves, seem incredibly reasonable. None of them are like, the coach was mean to me. Nobody's like,
but also
saying
it
that.
It wasn't like, P.S. I would like a pony. XO. Caliente. Yeah. Like, you're asking for things that are reasonable within your scope of work.
I think one of the interesting thing is too, it's like a lot of these players, since they all play for the same club team at Barca, like one of the best clubs
Barca,
in the world, they're like, you see what they're like, Real. What are we doing? Like, we have everything we could ever want at our disposal for our clubs. And then you go to like the national team and like, for what it's worth, also not a small national team, like a massive national team, and their resources are just bad. It's crazy.
I mean, it's also a wonder how the actual club teams hadn't gotten more involved, because even if you want to look at it as these players are commodities in which we are invested and expect a yield.
For sure.
You can't keep receiving your players back.
Yeah, the clubs should be
in a diminished state.
Yeah. Even more. I mean,
and I'm saying that as like, if you want to oversimplify it and don't make it a human issue, and you just want it as like, they're our commodity as a business.
Yeah,
you're still not in the greatest shape as a club to be receiving your players
right
back.
And which is why FIFA pays the clubs for releasing their players. That is a part of the bonus because they know that the clubs themselves are the ones who have made the investment in not only paying the players, but in their training, in their health. It only benefits.
So it's almost like it's complicit.
I mean, it is a handshake. It's a business. I mean, this is it's not rocket science, right? This is the business model of and the way FIFA continues to, you know, be the only player in the game. I mean, they run literally global football. Yeah. And the reason that happens is because everybody beneath them agrees, like, all right, you're going to run things. You're going to give us money for whatever, you make the rules or do whatever you got to do.
Yeah. Which has worked out great. See also the FIFA documentary.
So
what could go wrong?
There should be some... some better, like, I don't know, I'm not understanding, but just like this is why Infantino's comments are just more annoying, because it's just, it doesn't reflect what progress looks like, what it should look like, or what even if it's like a wildly corrupt business model, you're still not like, you're not playing the game of the corruption either, right? You know what I mean? Like, you could be phony, even just be like, we're going to do everything we can to make sure that women's football is on par and bringing in the same amount of money as men's football. And it's like, but no, that's not what he says. He goes, you got to push down the doors, ladies. And it's like, bro.
I want to help you. And we're like, bro, you're at the top of the mountain. What do you mean? You're like, the one that makes the decisions and helps create change. And you're telling us to help us help you. at what point? Like, I much prefer, like, today I feel gay, Infantino,
right.
This speech.
He must be the worst media trained, like, incredibly important person.
I am,
like,
convinced
of all
if
time.
He's not just like riffing, he has his speechwriter absolutely detests.
Yeah, his speechwriter is like, well, yeah, I didn't write this. Don't blame me. I had nothing to do with this. I didn't say that part. My man is going rogue.
He's literally pulling like I'm Ron Burgundy. And they're like, yeah, say that.
Let's
play. It's like in Practical Jokers. Someone's like in the bag. Is like, okay, no, you, now he's just
saying. Okay, say this now. Say you forget.
Oh my God, he actually said it.
Bro, it's going to be great on TBS.
True TV.
The behind the scenes is going to be crazy.
Next up, his Diddy of like, I feel pretty. I was so pretty.
I want to make that'd be a fun little edit to make, because you could make that, like,
oh, for sure. We'll put a meme up.
We'll figure it out. Somebody do that, I guess. I don't know.
We'll meme it up.
But we created it, so make sure you
credit me.
So let's just hear Gianni Infantino's comments. This is just a couple seconds of it.
I say to all the women that you.
I say to all the women. Everyone, whenever you start with, I say to all the women, and you're like, oh, bro, this guy's going to deliver some gold right now.
We could do like an easy one-to-one translation. I tell to all the women, actually.
Okay, here goes.
I say to all the women that you have the power to change.
Other women just forcefully clapping. Like, you could hear the eyes rolling as he says. So, all right, hold on. Oh, wait, hold on. There we go.
pick the right battles, pick the right fights, you have the power to change. You have the power to convince us men what we have to do and what we don't have to do. You do it, just do it. With me, with FIFA, you will find open doors. Just push the doors. They are open.
Okay. And then this is a tweet from this is from on Sky Sports that we're watching this, but the tweet, it's kind of cut off, but I think it says, Ada Hegerberg of Norway, she wrote, working on a little presentation to convince men who's in. Great. But yeah, when you, it's just the, I mean, there's a lot to kind of go through there, but the, you know, about, you can convince us men. Like I sometimes I'm like trying to think of it in, give them as much benefit of the doubt. Like if a woman said that speech, is it inspiring in any way? Right. I'm just like hypothetically thinking, like, is there a way that this is like, he means well by this? And there's just really, even a woman said this, I'm like, what are you talking about? Like what? It's not even about like, whose side are you on? It's just it's not the inspirational message that you think it is, right? It is, you're trying to inspire people to, be combative with, you're the boss, right? And you're like, fight me on things, as if like, are people not screaming from the rooftop?
Right, as if we haven't been doing that all along, but also outside of world football, every single minute of our existence.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we watched the U.S. women, the fight that they went through just to get equal pay.
Yeah, yeah.
And how long that dragged out, and the amount of just like derogatory comments thrown their way, and just overall ridicule and completely fabricated information that was regurgitated in a spin cycle of information.
The doors weren't open.
The doors weren't open.
People were literally holding the other side of the door, not allowing it to open.
Even if that were not the case, my question that I pose, and I've already said this, is why is the onus on women fight for anything
100%.
That the men are already given? Why is it that we're not just expected to have these things to be able to do our jobs to the best of our capabilities?
Yeah.
Why do we have to keep pushing? Why do we have to ask properly at the right time, in the right tone, and say please and beg for men's help to do anything? You are like you're at the top of an organization where you're in the position to exact change more quickly and readily than anyone is anywhere else. Yeah. And you're looking to us to tell us, hey, you know what? Maybe if you smile more.
It was, and he said this at like a, it was like a summit, right? It was like a women's football summit or something in Sydney, I think.
Like what got me is like, ask for the right things in the right way. Excuse me?
Yeah, it was a little bit the,
we're asking for things you know that we should have. Why do I have to phrase it in a way that's okay with you?
Yeah, I think the thing that's even more sort of out of touch, or just like, I don't know who he's speaking to exactly, right?
Bro,
he's the
one who could make the decision. It's like, dude, you could give us the money.
But think about the people in that room. There had to be a lot of influential people in the room, even also influential women in world football. And it didn't sound like he was talking to the fans that want equality and want more of a more fairness in the sport. It felt like he was talking to like a TED talk or like a business meeting where he's telling, you know where my office is, Janet. Come in. Yeah. Just put the proposal on my table.
I do, right? I do believe, as someone who's worked in corporate and understands how that dynamic works, that there are probably a percentage of women that were in that room that truly did probably believe whatever it is that he was saying, that would fall into a bucket and be like, yeah, he's right. Like, we just need to figure out how to do this better. Whereas there's certainly a more sane portion of that population that were kind of ready to throw their hands up.
Yeah, yeah.
And you kind of just forge forward because that's what we do. What's the alternative, right? All women leave FIFA as an organization. And then what? What's the worst alternative? It's like, we don't get to do that. You don't get to withdraw your time, your effort, your energy, your support, your money. Because otherwise, nothing will really happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why it makes even bigger joke out of the fact that he's like, all you got to do is push the door.
Yeah.
What do you think we've been doing?
What sucks is that that Gianni Infantino is progress in women's football, because Sepp Blatter was hey, why don't you wear some shorter shorts, ladies? Like, and this is, but and this is the progress, but this is the snail's pace that we sort of get it at.
It makes me so angry I can cry sometimes because you see the progress and you hope that it continues to move forward. And then when you look at everything contextually as a whole, you're like, we haven't really made it very far. Like, I am 1,000% on board. We should celebrate every single milestone, even if it's a centimeter gained. But you don't have the luxury ever.
Again, with the centimeter, the millimeter, kilometer.
Christian just had PTSD.
You don't get to rest because you can lose that exact measurement just as quick, if not more.
It's
unfair.
That's like the frustrating thing for me. I'm thinking about who he's talking to, and then it just feels like
it's so condescending.
It offers no inspiration whatsoever. It doesn't feel genuine really at all.
Oh, it's not genuine. It's not genuine.
Push the doors. All right. I guess, like, what does that look like exactly?
Yeah, just push the door.
Sometimes it feels like he's gaslighting everyone and just like, you know.
Well, that's what it is, right? It's extremely gaslight leaning.
It's not me. It's these other people I work with.
It's making the assumption that, like, we haven't been working toward change for an entire global sport for probably as long as it's been played.
If I was writing the speech, if I was writing it for someone that was not even genuine about those beliefs, I would throw in a billion virtue signal. We're changing world football. Next World Cup is, we don't even know where the next Women's World Cup is going to be.
Right.
So it's just like,
give me a break. Like, broadcasting rights weren't decided in some regions the very last second. So obviously priorities are not in line.
And regardless of, this is where I think Infantino sort of pushes blame off of himself. And it's like, and I think this World Cup did a lot to sort of, for the business of the sport, given how successful it was, especially it was in Australia, it was the most watched. Like the last, I think, Matilda's game was like the most watched football match in Australia, like history. Like, I think in almost television history or something like that. It was just incredible. But he sort of I want to put the accountability. If he is the FIFA president, then the margins and the success and the metrics for the men's game has to show improvement, but so does the women's game. And failure to show that growth is on him. And for as long as he's going to be president, it shouldn't be this, like, you know, we have men's football is the standard, and then we have this other thing that we're trying to, like, build up. It's just like, no, we've already had enough. We've already seen the growth. We've already seen the potential. And if the investment is there and you can see, like, you know, have some vision and some foresight, then he should be criticized for any failure that women's football may have.
I don't think you cannot go on forever assuming that the women's game will simply thrive despite everything and grow, which, quite frankly, it has in a lot of ways. But I think that if you were going to move the needle, it's happened the most where you've finally seen investment increase across the board for all these other nations. It's not like we're out of the woods here, right? You had France, you had Spain, you had Canada, all of them fighting with their FAs and respective governing bodies for all the same reasons that the US women were rallying and others. It's 2023 and there's still a lot to be rectified for sure, but you can't expect the women's game to grow at the same rate or have the same popularity as the men's side if you're going to continue to stack everything against them and then be like, okay, now perform.
I've always said invest more in women's football, but invest more in U.S. women's national team, and then every other team. They have to have less than us. We can't be losing like this.
One of the greatest errors that we have is legitimately letting that lead that we had erode we were so dominant for so long, and I know a lot of people online were upset when we sort of talked about this before because they're like, oh, American elitism. No, what I'm saying is, the U.S. women program, they got out much earlier than a lot of these other women's programs, and they were very good at it, right? Which made the U.S. a destination for people to play, okay? It's how we ended up with players like Sydney Leroux, who was Canadian, who came here as a kid to play with that intention, okay? It used to be that, right? But at some point, we slowed down in our investment of our women. And all of the other nations woke up and said, ooh, we should do that.
Yeah.
And now you see all the competition levels rising, which is a good problem to have for sure. Not great when you want to maintain your dominance as a US side. But that's why it's even more important now that these things like management and
coaching, everything
are more directed and looked at in a long term of US identity in terms of football and also what you want the next generations to shape into, because you have this foundational moment again to move forward on.
Yeah, yeah. So look, a lot of people, especially Infantino, desperately need to chill out, okay? And they need to chill with an ice cold Coors Light. That's the move, because that's what we've been doing this whole Women's World Cup. And we've been doing that while watching the Leagues Cup as well, which congratulations, Inter Miami, winners of the first Leagues Cup. Before Leagues Cup started, I would have said there is no way in hell that Inter Miami, doesn't matter, they could have Messi, they could resurrect Pele, and I just didn't think it would happen because they were so bad in Major League Soccer.
Yep, still. Let's see what happens when we go back into regular MLS play before we start. You know,
Messi loses
cart before horse or something.
Messi loses his Leagues Cup powers.
I don't know. But I was pulling for Nashville. I thought they could have this. If anybody was going to manage it,
they played
very well.
Better than anybody. But so look, congratulations to Lionel Messi, everybody on Inter Miami. The Beckham family was great as well. But this has been pretty wild. So we've been enjoying it, with a nice cold Coors Light, and it's perfect because now. Messi can chill with a nice cold Coors Light, and the mountains are going to turn blue right there. And, you know,
just for Messi.
He knows when it's cold enough to drink. So this summer's
look at the Coors, that's how it blues for you.
Love it. Okay. We didn't even ask Christine to sing.
That was great.
You owe me money.
Now we have to, she has to do every single ad read with a new jingle for Coors Light. So this summer, stay passionate and stay refreshed with an ice cold Coors Light, the official beer of Leagues Cup 2023. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/Cooligan. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. All right. We'll get back to Women's World Cup stuff because we have some tweets, some questions from the audience that we'll get to. But I do just want to react very quickly to the Leagues Cup final. Nashville, they play at Geodis Park. Penalties in Leagues Cup have been... There have been so many penalties that I can't remember what year of Leagues Cup those penalties happened. And we've only had one Leagues Cup. So
everything's bleeding together. Honestly, I have Women's World Cup. We've been to the Leagues Cup. We've been to Premier League play.
There's too many traumatic memories in for 30 days. You know what I mean? There's too many incredible moments. Messi arriving, crazy games with some of these Liga MX teams. But no, this final, we got to give credit to Nashville because Nashville played Inter Miami better than any other club in this tournament. And you know, you would imagine, when Busquets got there, when Messi got there, when Alba got, when they had, Messi played his first game and maybe trained once, twice, I think.
I think they said once or twice.
Right? And then bangs in that free kick to win the game against Cruz Azul. And then... So it only got better over time. We had the game against FC Dallas, which was insane, a 4-4 game, and then they won in penalties. And then Orlando City, and then Philadelphia Union. But then this so every team thought they knew what they were like. All right, I saw what the last team did.
Yeah.
I'm going to get it. This Messi guy, they ain't even marking him. So I'm going
to. Surely he can't do that to me also.
And to everyone's surprise, he did. He did do it to them. And but Nashville, I think, did the best job of just neutralizing him as much as
they could. They really, really did. But even Leagues Cup, the prior match, Zimmerman had a great match. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just, there's little to be done. And I think that's one of the things that people are missing that are new to Leagues Cup, MLS or otherwise, he had like four defenders on him.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, okay, at which point, it's not that they're simply bad, which I'm sure that if you could watch it, you would just oversimplify it and be like, oh yeah, they just don't know how to defend, which sometimes, you know, they get caught out. But for this match, that just simply wasn't the case. Like, Messi has a way of being messy. He finds holes, even if it seems microscopic to everybody else, and he'll exploit it.
Yeah. I mean, the goal that he scored, I mean, he also hit the post on another shot of, like, where, like, Dax McCarty...
That post's defensive stat now? It's probably better than some of the other players that have actually faced Messi.
Well, it was, they brought the post from the U.S.-Portugal game, actually. They put it there. So the post has some experience.
Two big saves from the post.
but so even the one that he hit the post, it was like, you know, you could tell essentially they weren't man-marking Messi, but they were like, it was like mostly Dax McCarty's responsibility, which is also just a great McCarty, Messi, you know, the battle where you love to see. It's just you don't even think about it.
Messi was what he lost sleep worrying about Dax McCarty.
But Dax is the homie.
Former Red Bull great Dax McCarty.
Dax was I think it was like a throw in, and Dax is like looking away for a second because Messi is always walking. He never moves, right? And then he's moving faster than everybody else, right? And that's why he ended up hitting the post. But the goal was just, you have Walker Zimmerman on him. You have Dax McCarty on him. You have Lovitz, I think, is like about to make a challenge. Everybody knows, oh shit, Messi has the ball. We know what our job is.
Walker got a bite of it.
Walker got a touch to it. Honestly, he did such a great defensive job. Like he hit which also, just to take the ball off of Messi, he's like, the crowd cheered every time Messi lost the ball or somebody put in the challenge and they got the ball or he made a bad pass. They're like, yeah,
let's go.
Yes, we did it.
We can't believe it actually happened.
Lift the trophy now. But if you see that goal in slow motion, and there's somebody, I think Matt Doyle retweeted it, but there's in slow motion, Walker Zimmerman gets just a slight deflection on the ball. And for any normal human footballer, this would put the player in disarray. They'd be like, oh no, I had control, but now he hit the ball and the ball hit off of me. Mm-hmm. So now I'm like, I don't know what to do next. It looked like Walker Zimmerman played a 1-2 off of Messi's shin to be like, yo, I'm going to set you up for like a perfect pass. But within inches of each other. So Walker gets a touch on the ball, it hits Messi, and it sets the ball up for him perfectly to get the goal and hit the ball around three defenders. And the goalkeeper, what is he going to do?
Yeah, he wasn't even in a bad position. He was right in the middle of the goal.
He was positioned well. He probably couldn't see the ball like exactly when it first sort of took flight. But it's unexplainable. I mean, the conversation comes up again. We talked about this before. Does Messi being this good make MLS look bad? And we asked this question and in jest, really. And some people are like, and they people subtweet us, bro. They do it because some people are like, man, I see people in the media asking if Messi is making MLS just. At us, bro. At us.
Give us the engagement. That's all we want, bro.
We're kind of joking around. But
also, Messi has made every league he's been in look stupid.
Yeah.
So why would MLS be the exception? Like, right. Have you watched the man's career? Like, he did it in Ligue 1, too.
Yeah.
It's a... is it going to help or hurt the kind of bias about Major League Soccer? Probably not. Who cares? Do you want him to fail here? Like, what's the better outcome?
No, I legitimately think that this is a kind of situation, Messi particularly, that is just going to be confirmation bias.
Sure.
Whatever it is that you wanted to see, you're going to see and you're going to argue it. That's going to be your hill you die on. And that's fine. But some of the takes are just absolutely crazy on Twitter. I refuse to call it X. I did take pause though for a minute. I was like, am I referring it to the platform in the wrong way?
Right.
I don't care. But yeah, it's whatever they want it to be because, you know, that's the internet is your oyster.
Yeah. Yeah. So, look, I think this game overall had a, intensity. I was anxious watching the game.
Oh, like, yeah, the atmosphere. There are,
I mean,
the TV.
Again, credit to Nashville, because a lot of the stadiums that Messi has played in, it's been maybe 50-50. Fans sell their tickets. Yeah. They get, and then you see a bunch of pink jerseys in the stands. And there was some of that. There were some people cheering Messi on. But for the most part, it was a hostile environment.
Nashville legit is a soccer city. Yeah. And okay. I think that people don't give it enough credit for what it is.
I haven't been yet.
They're like loud and proud as a gang. They also have really good players. Like, it's not like Haim Mukhtar team is great. A side of like nobody's. Okay. Like,
right,
Mukhtar is amazing. You got Fafa out there who, Fafa will score goals. Okay. Like, trust in him by all means. Walker Zimmerman. Who else? Like, it just, it's not.
Yeah, no, it's a strong
side. I understand that a lot of people who are new to MLS or a Leagues Cup are going to be like, who's this guy?
Right, right. Like, I mean, look, we all know probably.
Who's Alex Moyle?
MLS. Leagues Cup probably wanted Monterrey to have this game.
I mean, for sure, like, Liga MX were definitely probably punching air.
Right.
Not the intention.
Yeah, but I think this was the tougher matchup for Miami. I mean, I think they would have gone through Monterrey a lot easier than Nashville. Nashville were, seriously, they were really amazing. Yeah. And they 100%, they probably deserved to win this game. The penalties were just wild.
And then Messi is a cheat code.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Yeah, I thought everybody did so well on penalties. Even the younger players, it took unbelievably confident penalties. He ended up going to the goalkeeper. Drake Callender was unreal. Victor Ulloa, who missed the penalty for Miami, who we've had on the show a couple years ago.
You come back on to be like, haha, you missed that.
No, but it's just every time, whenever we have a player on the show and they like miss a shot or miss a penalty, I'm just like, no.
Was it you?
Anybody.
I would literally just blame my Cooligans. Honestly, I'm going to put this in my notes right now. Blame Cooligans appearances on all of my life missteps.
So remarkable, but huge. I'm curious what the rest of the season looks like for Inter Miami. Obviously, they have a huge, huge mountain to climb to make it to the playoffs. But since Messi has arrived, they have not lost a game. They've been remarkable. So you would think that if they can just kind of keep this up. And if you saw the press conference that he did, he said that he's going to play on turf.
I saw that.
I'm like, I feel like that's a little bit like your union and crossing the picket line on that one. Because
Messi.
How are you gonna leave your guys down bad? Like, nobody wants to play on turf. Nobody should have to play on turf.
Oh, so you
like
think
that
he should force them to put grass
down?
Okay.
Like, why wouldn't you? Nobody's gonna tell Messi no. Yeah. Why wouldn't you use that moment to advocate for everybody else in the league? And I don't say this only as a person with one leg right now.
We should mention Christina, we've got confirmation you have torn your ACL and MCL.
And both menisci. Both my menisci.
And she's here doing the show for you. Okay?
Yeah, never never would leave you guys down bad.
Okay. Yeah, so that's it's an interesting thing. I was surprised that he said he was going to play. And then it's interesting to use that like power to kind of force the league to.
I don't think that he lacks awareness of his capability to change things on a dime. And so I don't think that it was intentionally malicious in some way to be like, hey, I played as a kid on turf. Like, we can continue to play on turf. No big deal. But I do think that somebody probably should have gotten in his ear to be like, hey, bud, this is something that we've been trying to push for a while.
Let me whisper in your ear.
So
let me come to you on the day of my daughter's wedding. Like, we need you to help us out a bit.
It's interesting because when Felipe Cárdenas asked him in the press conference about like his influence over the sport in this country, he kind of didn't do that. He didn't do the like, I want to have the influence Pelé had on. He's just like, yeah, I just want to come in and play.
So, but like, counter, I feel like he is capable of knowing it, but saying it makes him sound a little douchey.
Maybe. Because Messi has never really been...
He's always been very quiet.
A public advocate of almost anything. Great,
right. And like, I don't mind that he doesn't serve as a public advocate. Not every player or person comfortable being in a situation of being, you know, in the spotlight like that. And he's totally comfortable, obviously, being the footballer that he is. I don't want to push on him that he should also be a very loud and proud public advocate.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think that with that comes a certain understanding that, you know, you can still do things behind the scenes that would benefit the people in the league that you're in.
Messi's just doing little Wakanda Forevers. That's not enough. But I'm curious to see what the next couple years are going to look like of what influence will he have. Is it simply just business and more eyeballs, or is it actually going to sort of change? Maybe other players are going to be like, you know, just like when Beckham arrived and then we got all these new stadiums and new clubs and investment, Messi's going to change something drastically. I don't know if it'll exactly be grass at every stadium.
I agree with you. But. And I kind of had early on when Messi was signed, tweeted about how, you know, I think that Messi is going to be the largest impact player since Beckham. And I got a whole bunch of replies that were like, well, what about this person? What about this person? Like, no. See, you're misunderstanding. I'm talking about the massive butterfly effect their coming to MLS, which I do think Messi will, but we're only able to talk about even Beckham's impact in retrospect, right? He took a massive gamble in requesting for the first time ever of a league that he wanted to eventually be an owner in a league that was still nascent, that you hadn't really seen the results, impact, revenues from, but he still wanted in. And so he either saw something or was an elite level gambler at that juncture in his life that kind of brought us to this, you know, sort of messy everything that we're seeing, which is fine, right? But I do think, for me at least, I'm feeling a bit messy fatigue because everything seems to be about Messi and it's overshadowing a lot of players that are super talented that deserve their shine. Mm-hmm. Everything now is about going up against Messi, who's facing Messi, tickets to see Messi. And I get it, because he's an absolute legend in the making, I'll say, because he's not done with his career yet. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that he still has much to do. But I think in a lot of ways it overshadows things that I wish were still getting more coverage than clicks and picks. Mm-hmm.
I get it. I think maybe, you know, we'll see that that light being sort of shined on the league probably after he leaves. He's going to take up a lot of the spotlight.
And I know, for his duration, which is great. And I just hope that more of the positivity comes from his playing in the league. He's certainly changing the play amongst his teammates. He's definitely making them better. That's something that's clear and obvious to anyone that's watched Inter Miami play in the time before Messi. We're going to call it the BM. After Messi, the
BM. BM, bowel movement, I guess.
We'll workshop that, okay?
We're still figuring it out.
You know, need to come up and send it out to the group.
In the before Messi times. But yeah, like it's very encouraging to see what his teammates have managed to pick up on.
Sure.
And, you know, that's the kind of impact that you want, right? Now we just need to figure out how to spread that more evenly over the other sides. Because you're not going to get, what, like a Messi per team? Like, that's an impossible task.
That's what I would do.
Simply go out there and blow your budget. Get a one-time generational player. It's not that hard.
Robert Taylor for MVP. Anyway. All right, let's get back to Women's World Cup. Let's answer some questions, but I want to pull up this tweet from Gotham FC that just says, says, quote, sure feels nice to have World Cup champions on your team. So now people are like, all right, well, Spain just won. They tweeted this right after Spain won. They currently do not have any Spanish player on their team. I don't know if they have a Spanish player that's not on the World Cup roster, but it implies that they have signed a player that is on this World Cup roster on Spain, and everybody's like, "Yo, what are you talking about? Why you? Can you just say who it is? What's going on?" So I guess the expectation is we should be hearing soon.
And then they tweeted back after the always proud of Ali, Kelly, and Ash, you know, which is very like cheeky.
Right.
If they do not have big news to drop, that's like, hey, we figured out, we've got like, I don't know.
Yeah, like, yeah. Because this is not, the second tweet saying who they're, that is not, I guess I thought they were, they tweeted that because people were thinking that they weren't acknowledging the World Cup winners that they already have on the team.
I don't know. To me, it sounds very vague to begin with.
Okay.
It sure feels nice to have World Cup champions on your team and then gets everybody like, frothing at the mouth, yeah. Like
they're
what?
Playing with us,
and then being like, "Hey, yeah, we're always proud of Ali."
They had
Kelly
to know
Nash.
That this was something people would think. If that is that they think that they're referring to a Spanish player on
or,
the current team,
or they were just trying to get the wild clicks up today,
okay,
or
I don't know.
Baiting everybody. Hey, I don't know, you know because I don't know. I mean, less a few of the Liga MX femenil players. You think they're going to pull a Barça or Real off that squad?
That's right. That's I don't know. I mean, like the first name, the name that comes to mind, I'm like, all right, Gotham. Like who are we getting? Are we picking whoever we want?
I mean, I guess we'll find out in due time if they were just like, you know, dangling the cheese in front of the mouse there.
The transfer market in the women's game is getting a lot more competitive. There's a lot more money being invested. So players, obviously,
But that would be a heck of a ledge to be like, hey,
yeah,
potentially going from Barca Champions League to Gotham.
Sure. I mean, you would have to argue. And in that regard, I mean, I still feel NWSL is the most competitive league in the world. I mean, I don't know if it's... Maybe,
I feel like it's changed a lot since the pandemic. I feel like they lost a bit of their grip on the world, especially since WSL popped off.
But I'm basing
La Liga Femenil.
La Liga is absolutely dominated by Barca, really. It completely dominates. So as far as the competitiveness within the league and the parity between the clubs, it's not as good as NWSL. NWSL, from game to game, this is why you don't really know who's gonna win. Some teams, this not outside of like the Thorns and maybe the couple years of like the Courage, you really didn't know who's gonna like win a game. But if you're watching Barca play almost anybody in La Liga, it's probably so. That's why I mean, as far as competitiveness,
I feel like, but that kind of matches 1-1 with their men's leagues. That's just kind of how even La Liga was.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So I feel like there's not too much of a difference. Same thing with Serie A Femminile. Like Juventus have been the most winning side, and you know Juve had the same history, and they kind of branch off of that. But I feel like NWSL has made great leaps and bounds, right? And I say that as a formerly known as Sky Blue supporter, who had people literally living and working out of office trailers. Okay,
yeah.
Like things changed a lot, but there's still much to do, and I think that in the same respect, a lot of these European leagues are investing faster than we are in NWSL, and we're going to start lagging for that same reason.
I agree. Okay, so I want to get to a couple questions before we wrap up. So we got some questions from on Twitter. Anibal at Latin Heat, the homie, he said, favorite team of the tournament, and why was it Colombia?
I have so much to think about in this instance. No, Caicedo made this her tournament for sure. She showed out. I think that if anything, more broadly in this World Cup, you got like the rise of the teenagers, and they're built different.
Yeah,
they are wildly impressive, and they are only just getting started. I can't even fathom playing in a World Cup as a teenager. I was lucky if I knew how to match my socks at that point.
My favorite team, it's obviously, look, I'm probably going to say U.S. or whatever out of just like, when it comes to favoritism, but I think Colombia were probably the most, I don't know, surprising, at least to me, as far as I did not expect those kinds of performances from them. So it's honestly it's a very strong tie between Colombia and Australia. I also did not expect that much from Australia, but the story for the Matildas was beautiful, and seeing the country support them so much, and I follow them on Instagram, and then like they did like they were talking about like when they were walking through different whether airports or malls or whatever, people used to be like oh, well done, Matilda, well done. Like just a little tip of the cap kind of thing. And then after the second or third game, people started stopping them and saying, thank you so much for everything that you do for the country and stuff like that. And that was just beautiful to hear.
That stuff makes me such a mush. Yeah, like it's the stuff that makes me cry. But we had like a lot of really good romantic underdog stories this mm-hmm. World Cup. I was rooting for Japan. They are by no means the underdog. They play beautifully. They're very composed. I had them winning the group, which they did. And I thought they'd progress beyond Spain even. So I was wrong there. But I also fell in love with the Jamaica team. Sure. They had so much heart. And again, a side that was at odds with their FA, who had simultaneously running GoFundMes just to be at this tournament. They had their advocate, Sadella Marley, who also is a benefactor of the team to ensure that they get through.
Do you interview her?
Yeah, she is one of the most delightful human beings I've been able to talk to. Mm-hmm. And even she in this year, you know, we kind of asked her, like, what's your plan to ensure that the FA actually pay the girls this time around? Because both they and Nigeria had obviously been paid by FIFA, but the Fed never distributed the monies to the actual players.
Yeah.
And she kind of just said, no, I'm going to make sure that they pay out this time. The whole world is watching.
Yeah.
And just having to be in that position, but also using her broad platform to be able to get that done for those players, especially since, as she mentioned, you know, Jamaica are still catching on as a people to support the women's side. She said, you know what, like they'll get there eventually in their fandoms, but I'm going to continue to support this team, like, you know, with my whole chest all the way through.
Yeah, I saw there was some FIFA executive. I don't know who it was. I know it was a woman, but basically the quote was just like that she's going to make sure the players receive their money in their bank accounts.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's just such a, is that pushing the door? Are we pushing the door hard enough?
Are we pushing it? Wait, did you ask the right way?
Did you convince men to make sure it goes into their bank accounts? Right.
Did you ask properly and at the right time? And also, is that the right thing to ask for? Like, you only get three wishes, like a genie. So like, make sure you get that in.
The next question was, what was your favorite game of the tournament? Which is an issue. I'm like, I'm looking through the results of some of these games, and it's kind of obviously a little sad for New Zealand, but that Philippines game, the 1-0 win.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite. What an upset! What a wild kind of result. The game. Colombia, Germany, the win against Germany was another one. I was just like, what?
World Cup, we were spoiled because we got a lot of really good matches. But I think that for me, I have to go with the final. This just was masterclass. Like, just the way that Spain even moved with the ball.
Well, after losing 4-0 to Japan, I did not think Spain would come back.
That was actually my favorite game. Japan.
Yeah.
I loved watching Japan. They were just so exciting.
Japan are so good. And I don't understand why people don't hype them more. Like, it's kind of confounding to me. They have been sort of the U.S.'s contemporary. They've been World Cup winners. They've been World Cup finalists. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They, you know, sort of have been concurrently running where this level of excellence is expected. So for me, Japan were my very early pick before I wanted to come to terms with the fact that the U.S. were getting bounced.
Right. I always enjoy games with a lot of like drama and storylines. And obviously the Nigeria-England one was also
that was a good one.
The stamp heard around the world.
So
but Nigeria was good.
So close, though. I wanted Nigeria to win that so badly. Yeah. You have no idea.
Great game. I mean, it's nice to reminisce on this stuff. These were really fun moments. Some of the other questions, let's see. This is a good one from Claudia Berger, at Claudia E. Berger said, what player is most likely to secure the bag following their performance in the tournament? Good question. I mean, we spoke about this a little bit before we started recording. We sort of said, basically, like Linda Kai said, is definitely a shoe-in for a bag receival, bag reception, okay?
Expedite the bag. Yeah.
Okay. But then after the final, you also have to say Salma Parayuelo, who was remarkable coming off the bench. Just what a threat every single time she had the ball. And so that's the first person that came to her. Yeah. She won the Young Player of the World Cup Award. She has won the U17, U20, and the Senior World Cup consecutively.
I think in terms of collecting the bag, I think that all our eyes are going to be on the teenagers this World Cup. I think you're going to see them get a boost, probably also in like sponsorship and otherwise moving forward. You don't really make a splash at a World Cup and not have anybody.
You got to be careful, though, because Carly Lloyd is going to say, hey, they care more about other stuff than winning. I don't know.
How dare you?
can't just be, you know, sponsoring stuff, but it is what it is.
Let's do one more. We got time for one more.
Okay, one more. This is a good one. This is from Jillian Fairchild. They ask, how psyched are you to see another... media provider come in to make the future World Cup coverage less crap? And where do you, don't talk about Telemundo like that. And where do you see room for growth to lead the analysis and cultural coverage going forward?
Hire the Cooligans, obviously.
Think CBS would be up for it. Obviously, this is more directed at you, given that you work at CBS. Wrap here as far as like how, obviously they're talking about Fox and Fox Sports, how they cover the World Cup. I mean, when it comes to World Cups, and Fox has been very direct about this, they're not trying to talk to the people that are rabid soccer fans. I mean, that's fairly obvious. It is trying to introduce people, every 4 years, been trying to introduce people to the game, kind of hold their hand through it. And so I think for people like us that obviously are obsessed with the game and know it inside and out, it's frustrating for, you know, people like us that are really into the game. And because you go to halftime, you do post game, and the talking points are not about tactics, they're not about how they played and stuff like that. It is simply who scored the goals, what did their performances make me feel like? You know, like that's kind of always the trying to find talking points rather than an analysis of the game. And it's not for everybody. It's definitely not for us. I mean, that's how it is. And they've been pretty upfront about it. And yes, we make jokes and about Lawless and Lloyd and whatever. A lot of people just don't agree with their opinions and whatever. That's it. We're allowed to like disagree with people. But when it comes to, I mean, the question about like, would CBS be up for it? Of course. I mean, why wouldn't they? Who doesn't want, we'll broadcast the World Cup if you want us.
Although I would say,
Blangola like, National Television.
I don't think that I could possibly have an unbiased opinion, but CBS, Paramount Plus have far and wide doing a much better job of broadcasting for just like world football in general, especially if you watch our Champions League coverage, which is
the gold standard,
the most fun of all fun. But I just think that with the way that they've approached the production of every single aspect of football broadcasts and otherwise, whether in studio or out, it's just meticulous. So there's definitely a very high bar and an expectation set at CBS that I think would serve World Cups well.
Without a doubt. And it says something about, especially in those Champions League broadcasts, it's the analysis, there's humor, there's lightheartedness, but then I think what really kind of hits a nail on the head and shows that people appreciate it is when the players go to the desk and start talking to either Kate or Thierry or Micah or Jamie. Yeah. And then you see how fun the players are, like, oh, if it was Alexi Lawless and
can you imagine Rob Stone dancing?
It wouldn't be the same.
Yeah,
that's
the
all.
Last thing that you want is to try to like convince or wrangle players to come talk to you. So having it the other way around is like a great problem
right?
Yeah. There are people that you want to talk to. They're eager to. They'll give them like high fives off the sideline in between doing warmups, which is just, it's nice because it proves that, as an aside from being very good at their jobs, especially that Champions League crew, that they're genuinely good people.
Totally. You know? Yeah, yeah. So look, that it would be that the next World Cups, men's and women's. There's no broadcaster yet. We don't know who it's gonna be. So there's gonna be a lot of bids. I can't even imagine the amount of money it's going to be in. The men's World Cup is going to be in the U.S. The women's World Cup is rumored to possibly be in a CONCACAF region. So it's going to be crazy. So
who knows how they'll determine that? They'll just like blindfold you and spin
the globe. Spin the throw globe. A dart at the globe. Yeah, exactly.
I think this is how you.
This is nice. This seems like a good conflict area to plug
to
down.
To determine World Cups, we should do what Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg want to do and fight in like an
in
octagon.
The Roman Coliseum. Okay. Women's World Cup. I mean, I'd be okay with the World Cup in Italy.
We should have the billionaires from these, media conglomerates fight for the World Cup.
Why? I want to see Alexi Lalas in the octagon person. Everyone just line out the door to fight him, bro.
Let's do it. Why not? Like make the bid a part of the entertainment, we're losing money, leaving money on the table.
Listen, we might release the Lions afterward, okay?
No promises.
All right, let's wrap up there. Everybody, thank you so much for hanging out with us for these 31 days. I don't even remember how long we've been doing this, but
it has been 100 years.
We've been doing daily episodes. Obviously, Alexis, has missed the last four or five. He had to go on a trip to Germany.
Alexis is great adventure.
A family thing, him and his wife. But this is, I'll end here with this. This World Cup has been, we did this for the Men's World Cup, and it was like challenging in itself, doing episodes every day. Obviously, we're stand-up comics, and we're trying to be somewhat taken seriously in this industry. we do our best to try to provide some sense of levity and also some analysis that you don't just call us idiots online for.
Unfortunately, that's okay. Well,
it's hard to
think. Sometimes people just want to call anyone an idiot, exactly. So you can't even take it seriously.
So, but the idiot to intelligent sort of ratio or like complementary ratio has been better. So we're not called idiots too much. But we did this for the Men's World Cup, and it was challenging. The odd hours of the games, recording every single day. Obviously, it's not difficult getting everybody together and doing all this stuff, editing, all this other stuff. And then doing this for the Women's World Cup where the hours were even tougher. And then I also have a baby at home, so I'm like feeding a baby while watching some of these games at 4 a.m. and stuff like that. But this has, we cover women's soccer from time to time where we have players or we talk NWSL or, here and there. But we've never done this for a whole month. I've literally just focusing on the women's game. And this is why it's also great to have like attacking shows like Attacking Third on Paramount Plus, and just it's becoming more a part of daily life, just talking about women's soccer, women's football. But doing this every single day has definitely, given me just a different perspective, and just being so ingratiated in it every single day, talking about all the stories, all the comments from whether on TikTok, on Instagram, like so many people being so supportive and appreciative of the fact that we're just talking about the women's game, even though there's a bunch of stuff going on. Premier League started anyway. They didn't care. League's Cup is going on. They're like, oh, Women's World Cup. Okay, we got another tournament that we're going to be doing at the same exact time. But it's just, I don't know. I don't get too emotional. But it's just like we've gotten a lot of good feedback. And it's been like really, it's allowed me to have a new appreciation for the game in a different way. Even from like, I'm a comic, but even from a journalistic perspective, I'm like really trying to analyze these games every day. I didn't get everything right every single time because the game
nobody does.
They're at 4 a.m. and you don't even remember what the lineup was.
What day was that?
So we're trying our best, but I just want to say thank you to everybody who like tuned in. People, there's some people who listen to every single episode. It means a lot. And doing stuff like this is I hope it's meaningful to the people who are listening, but it's meaningful to us who get to kind of who are creating it as well.
Because I think it's good because this is actually my unbiased opinion. The Cooligans, you guys have been so good at bridging gaps in that way, because you can take a comedic angle on some very serious things, but also the women's side should be covered more broadly as a normal thing, sure. right? It shouldn't be the exception to the rule. But as an aside, it's nice to have your eyes open to, and also the gratitude from, more broadly, the women's soccer community, which is very, very big. Yeah. It's very, very passionate. It's very, very loud. And they will absolutely hold every single person near it accountable. And I appreciate them for that. It's a very unique community.
Yeah.
So to see that, you know, some of them had reached out, that you maybe picked up some additional, like, generally, is it's a not, wonderful thing.
It's not the women's soccer community calling us idiots and fat and in the comments. I gotta be honest. It isn't. So y'all are dope. Y'all are pretty cool. Really appreciate the love and support.
But yeah, with the overlap of a Women's World Cup, you have that community, and then you also have the casuals that maybe feel less hesitation to kind of get on board. Because you're not, you know, turning your nose up at them.
Sure, sure. No, so this has been great. I mean, you know, we always stick with our commitment to, like, we're just talking about the game. It's not specifically about men or specifically about
women. Do you hear that,
women.
Infantino?
and you know, our mission statement has always been to just kind of highlight the player and show their personalities and laugh and joke, because we never get to see players on comedy shows being like loose sort of versions of themselves.
Yeah.
And so we're trying our best to continue to do that. But this has been just a great thing. You know, shout out to everybody who joined us throughout the month. We had so many incredible guests. Shout out Christine Cooper, always coming through. Meg Linehan, Doug McIntyre. We have Rosie
Melissa
White.
Ortiz, Melissa Rosie Ortiz. White, everyone. We're definitely forgetting some people, but.
Yes, apologies.
Meg Reyes.
Meg Reyes as well. Just awesome. We got to make some really, really great episodes and really, really learn a lot about not only the specific teams, the specific countries, but just really just been an awesome, awesome experience. I just wanted to make sure I highlighted that. And shout out to everybody again. Gully Squad. I mean, we have our Patreon. Please, if you are interested in joining just another really vibrant community of really awesome people, patreon.com/soccercoolians. We have a Slack channel of just literally the best people. And when it comes to just the, whether it's literally just like commenting about a game that's currently happening, or whether it's people who are traveling on away days and always look out for each other and support each other. And it has like nothing to do with us. It's just like the people always look after each other in it as well. So we've been part of this soccer community for a long time. And it's just great to see it grow to what it's sort of become. And even within our little community, it's been just life-changing and really, really inspiring. So thank you to everybody who's tuned in. We will be off for a week. Yes. So
taking a
break. We'll be back August 28th. So we'll be out for a week to recover. I'll get to look at my son in the eyes again instead of staring at the screen watching World Cups. We're going to have a much-needed break, and we'll be back August 28th. Again, and we'll continue to bring the heat as usual. So sorry for this long...
I was just going to say, we'll be posting new stuff too next week, so stay in our YouTube feed, stay in the podcast feed.
There'll be some
not gonna be
bonus
new
stuff
shows.
Dropping. Yeah, so be on the lookout. All right, everybody, thank you so much. From everybody on the Cooligans team, Meadowlark Media, the Lebatard family. We're all very grateful for tuning in. And again, shout out to Christine Cooper. Christine, let everybody know where to follow you.
Twitter at C Cupo, Miss Cupo on IG. I don't know if I even have Threads anymore, but yeah, those are good. Those are good. I can't keep up anymore. Oh. But yeah, regularly on the Galazzo Network on Paramount Plus. So we'll see what's ahead.
Okay. And I hope the knee recovery goes well.
But. Yeah, that too. I forgot in that moment. I'm like, I don't know. You also may see me on my sofa. We'll see. No, hopefully I recover from this terrible triad. We'll
all right.
See.
You'll be back screaming at people on the pitch in no time. Don't worry about it.
You know my love language.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much. We'll see you back on August 28th. Peace, everybody.
Now's the time to start your next adventure behind the wheel of an exciting new Toyota hybrid. With the largest lineup of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electrified vehicles to choose from, Toyota has the one for you. Every new Toyota hybrid comes with Toyota Care 2-year complimentary scheduled maintenance, an exclusive hybrid battery warranty, and Toyota's legendary quality and reliability. Visit your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places. See your local Toyota dealer for hybrid battery warranty details.